From the BBC World Service, I'm Katie Smith, and this is Not by the Playbook. Now, we don't often cover the sport of badminton, but when the Olympics rolls around, it is watched and loved by millions across the world. It's a racket sport where instead of getting a ball to land over the net and inside the opposition side of the court, you play with a shuttlecock. You know, the open conical shape formed by feathers sticking out of a rounded cork bottom, obviously. Now, at the 2004 Athens Olympics, Britain's Gail Emms, alongside her partner Nathan Robertson, were on the brink of mixed doubles gold.
I still dream about it.
Wow.
I even had a dream last night about the Olympics as well. And there's still something about it I haven't quite processed and let go. And because I do the speaking circuit as well, I talk about it all the time. So it's like really hard to, it's part of my identity, that silver medal, but it's a match that I lost. So I have to keep talking about it that I've lost. So in my brain sort of goes, yeah, you talk about that silver. And sometimes you think, yeah, I lost, yay. And you're telling this story and sometimes you start believing the story. Oh my gosh, stop talking like it's a loss, you know, losing. Yes, you lost a match, but it was a start or something amazing. And that's what I have to keep, you know, sort of remembering. Yeah, it still sits. I've never watched a match back.
Ever?
Never.
Oh. No, why?
I can't watch it because I can't change it. And I still remember how I felt as well. It's so... Oh my God, y'all. It's, I can still remember a few points and I know that they're the key points that why we lost the match. And I know it was myself not feeling like I belonged on that court. And it's a massive, women and imposter syndrome is huge. And we've all probably thought, men too. I know it's not just women, but I felt like I didn't truly believe that I belonged on that final. Yeah, it was my first ever final. And there was something in me that was like, oh, weren't I lucky to be on this court? That's how I felt. And that's what pains me. And that's why I can't watch it back, because I know how I felt. And I know if I'd have felt more confident and if I felt that I truly belonged to that court, then we would have won. And it was on the podium. And I felt this anger. And I went, I am never letting myself feel like that again. And I still remember it. And I remember just, we went backstage and the whole team and everyone was there going, oh, unlucky. And I went, I want gold. And I knew I could get better. And that's something really powerful. And we've all had moments like that, whether we know we could still improve, we know we can do better. And for me, it was a bit of like a, you silly cow, you could have, you know, it was a bit like I slapped myself around the face or kicked myself up the backside. But it was that. And I knew it was a really powerful feeling. And I was looking up at the, you know, on the podium at the, you know, gold medalist next to me. And I was like, I should have been you.
And do you think you were able to change that mindset? Did you notice a difference?
Exactly. We won everything after that. Honestly, I bloody wish I would have, you know, said it before. It's so annoying because I know it is, you know, we talk about the power of mind in sports so much. We won the Commonwealths, we won in the European Championships, we went to won World Championships, we're number one in the world, we won the All England, we won the China Open. Da-da! It's just mad. And it's because I then suddenly went, you know, I deserve to be on this court, changing that mindset.
It's quite hard to hear that. To listen to what Gail just had to say there, if I'm honest. She's such an open and friendly woman. And it's sad to think that she didn't see what everyone else could see in her, that it ultimately played a part in her failing to win that Olympic gold. But it was once Gail had retired from the game that the unexpected twists and turns of life started to see her struggle to cope. She's detailed it all in her autobiography.
With badminton, with sport, I can still sort of know that I'm good at something. So that was my problem when I came out of sport, because at least I had something I knew I was good at. And when you go into the big bad world, oh my God, where do you rank? There's no ranking list. Like, I don't know where I place. Like, I know where I'm placed, the number one here in badminton. And then everything, And that was the real shock. And no matter what I tried to fight, you know, in badminton and sport, you can fight your way, you can train, you can do this, you can do that. People give you feedback. You know what you're bad at. You know what you need to improve on. You need to do this. Well, normal world doesn't look like that. And it was, that was the shock. So I had to completely reframe my mind. And at times I just couldn't do it and really, really struggled. I did get myself into those messy situations because I didn't have a plan.
What sort of messy situations, if we can go there?
So when you retire from sport, you basically go on a massive high. You're like, woo, you're drinking, you're eating burgers, you're having a lovely time, you can stay in bed all day. And then, of course, you know, so then it's like the crash happens. And that for me was over a year. And that just dipped down. And suddenly you're like grieving something, but there was no replacement. So you're not getting your adrenaline, you're not getting your dopamine, you're not getting your highs of what sport gives you, the endorphins, anything like this. And then you're not finding your place. You know, we need our people. We need people around us. We need our team. We've all got our mini teams, whether it's family, friends, we've got that. And suddenly I was like, didn't have that anymore. I had no one checking in on me. Are you okay? Are you doing this? And so I was just slipping. And I know it sounds a really stupid thing to say now, but no one ever told me that I'll never feel the same as I did when I was on badminton court. And I just trying to find something that will get that same feeling.
Did it change how you thought about yourself?
Yeah, totally. It made me think, what was the point? It actually made me think, what was the point of playing elite sport? Because I was just walking around going, you know, no job, no money. I hated how I thought about myself because I was just lost, absolutely lost. Yeah.
You look really emotional, actually, even just talking about it now.
Especially as a girl in sport, you're not, you can't show any emotions. You're not allowed to show any emotions. You can't cry. You know, you got, especially playing mixed doubles, you're one of the boys. You've got to be tough girl and everything like this. So for me, when I was like slipping and I knew that I was just on this slippery slope and the blinkers were on, I was like, fine, I've got this. I can do this. And the stubbornness kicked in. But really, I should have just been, just said, help somebody, please. And that's, yeah, we do it. I don't know. Some people are just better at it than others, but it still feels very.
And did you have to say help eventually? Was someone able to help you in that situation?
I think I'd applied for about 100 jobs. And well, I went for a meeting actually in London, and I'd done all the prep work at a sports marketing agency. And I went for this meeting. It cost a peak train ticket to get there. The guy wasn't even in his diary. And so he goes, oh, come on. He was hungover. He goes, come on, let's go and get a coffee across the road. And I remember going over to the road and he was like, I did my sales pitch. I was like, come on, I can do this. And then just got up and left. And I went, are you kidding me? So I've just wasted an hour. And he hadn't even paid for the coffee. And it was that point when I like looked at my card, I was like, I don't know if I can afford the coffees. And it was, that was the lowest point of my life. And luckily my card went through and I think I had 22 pence left in my account. And I got back on the train and I cried my eyes out and I was like, no one has a clue what is going on. I'm lost. I'm distraught. And I went home and I just wrote on my laptop, and it was more of like a really, for me, it was like, I need a job. And I sent it to a journalist friend, Sue Mott. And yeah,
I love that.
And I just went, I know exactly. I went, Sue, can you just put this out here? Because I don't know what else to do. And then when she put it out, it went viral. And what touched me the most was other sports people got in contact. And that was all, oh, I'm going to cry. Because I'm like, how many other sports people got in contact? And they said they were in the same situation. They were left on their own. They were lost. They didn't know what to do. They were struggling. Some of them had suicidal thoughts. It was so I had about 100 messages from sports people in bad situations and some really serious ones. It was nice in a way that I knew I wasn't alone, but it was also a bit like, oh my god, everyone's seen this. But it needed to be said.
And that vulnerability started a conversation which has continued on. It's now become a book for you as well. You're in such a better place. You look so vibrant and happy. So how do you reflect on it all?
A really interesting fact that I hadn't processed that what I'd achieved, and I hadn't really sat down and gone and patted myself on the back. And I think we all do this in life. We all just go on, carry on the treadmill. And actually sometimes we should just sit back and go, Oh my God, we're awesome. We've done awesome stuff and we've had brilliant people help us away. So yeah, but I think you have to be vulnerable. And at times, you know, as an athlete, you don't like being vulnerable, it's seen as weakness. And you think, oh no, must be strong, must be like tough, cookie. And actually, when you admit weaknesses, you admit your vulnerabilities, that's actually when the best, you know, sort of comes out. That permission to be kind to yourself. Mm. Because I, honestly, it's, I didn't realize how tough on myself I am. But I think, I don't know if that's from sport or if that's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think sometimes I punish myself for slacking. You know, I call it slacking and it's like, no, Katie, you're allowed to,
yeah,
have to just relax for a day if you need it.
Yeah, I think this, I went to a girls' school as well. And I think I grew up with this very high, you must, girls must take over the world. You must do this. It's work. Busy girls are happy girls and happy girls are busy girls. And then with sport as well. So I was always trying to, like, you know, be the best. And then you're like, it's okay, don't do the best. It's fine.
Especially not on a Tuesday afternoon. You do it tomorrow.
This coach said to me, he goes, lower your number. And I thought, I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, you will never be 100% perfect. So stop trying to be it. You're like, what? You know, that's the whole aim, isn't it? I mean, look at it, like Messi and Ronaldo, they never play a perfect game. So why do we try and be perfect every day? So he said, lower your number. And I think I lowered it to about 85 and I'm much happier. Some days it's only a 30, Katie. Sometimes
it's all right. 30. Sometimes a 30 is just about best. Get out of bed.
Exactly that. There we go.
Are you proud of yourself?
I am proud. I have navigated obstacles that I never thought were going to be there. I've got two amazing boys. Live a great life. I'm not the richest person at all by any means, but I know my team. I know who I am now.
Gail, thank you so much for being so honest and taking so much time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
Former Olympic medalist Gail Emms, and her book Grit and Goose Feathers is out now.